Ambulance work session, October
16. They're not. I mean, we'll pay
that's how they see them.
Hey, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Are we ready?
Yes, sir. All right. Let's get going. All right. Work session on ambulance procurement. Buy some ambulance.
Yeah. Good morning, Commissioners. Doug Smith Lee from Clark Regional Emergency Services Agency. I just wanted to kind of bring you up to speed since we last met. And last time I had a meeting was dealing with the EMS system design decisions, which are those policy decisions that provides guidance for us as far as the next ambulance contract is concerned. And so the next step now is starting again at some of those legal instruments. So I wanted to kind of give an overview of those legal instruments for your upcoming hearings on October 29th.
Can you, Doug, could you use the microphone, please?
Sure.
It's not very loud.
You just have to get talked into it.
Yeah, turn it up.
Keep going.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay.
Little.
A little bit. Okay, there we go. All right. So today what we'll be covering is basically an update on where we are currently with the annual procurement of the next 8 months contract. One of the things that we need to be doing is an extension to the current ambulance contracts. We'll go over that, the reasons why. The interlocal agreement and the ordinance for the next contract, those are two of the key legal instruments when we talk about ambulance contracts. Needing to modify our current EMS District 2 ordinance, and I'll talk about that with you. And then finally, the interlocal agreement that CRESA has with the county and the district to do the ambulance contract administration and the regulation on behalf of the district and the county. I think you've seen this slide before, but just as a quick overview again, basically the enabling state legislation that cities, counties, EMS districts, and even fire districts have are up above in those blue boxes. Cities and counties need to show that the current system is inadequate if there's a current private ambulance provider there. We're a bit different in that we have an ambulance contract. So obviously at the end of that contract, cities and counties can then choose what they want to do. But if you had, say, open market, free competition of private ambulance services, they have to show that there's inadequacy before they can do something different, like either provide for ambulance service or contract for ambulance service. EMS districts, there's one unique thing in the state of Washington where counties can create EMS districts, and we have two. One is EMS District 1, which is North Country EMS, and then EMS District 2, which is this ambulance contract. And then finally, districts can also contract for private ambulance service, or they can provide for ambulance service. Down below, what kind of got the ball going for us was back in 1990 initially. There was a lawsuit that was brought against the county and the district, EMS District 2. There were two private ambulance services, and they said, we want to have a 50% market allocation, in other words, a 50-50 split, or I should say one of those ambulance services. At that time, it was about medical services. And there's really no easy way to do that other than call rotation, and which is a great idea when you're talking about ambulance service, why you send closest ambulance. So they went to the U.S. District Court, and the District Court said the way to solve this is don't have them compete within the market, but have them compete for the market. With 911, people don't really do comparison shopping when there's an emergency. So have them compete for the market. And so we did that back in 1992, and we've been fairly successful.
Excuse me, yes. Doug, was that suit brought by one of the ambulance providers?
Yes, mm-hmm. But medical services.
Okay.
And interestingly enough, it was awarded to Buck in 1992. What ties right now all the communities together, because this is EMS District 2, the unincorporated areas for about 80% of the county. It excludes North Country EMS in that area served by CAMAS. But what ties the cities to that unincorporated area is this interlocal agreement. And that was initially established in 92, and we have a current one with our current contract. It was done in 2004.
Doug, do you have a laser pointer?
Oh, yes, I'm
sorry.
Can
you show us where you, as you talk, can you tell us where you ran on that?
So we had a settlement agreement, and then after the settlement agreement, the city said, you know what, we want to, at the time it was basically the county, or EMS District 2 and the city said, We want to be part of this ambulance contract because it will create a fractured system. At that time, the city was about 20% of probably the call volume of that current service area. And they said, we're going to create a fractured system if we aren't part of that system. So they passed a resolution saying, we would like to join in through an interlocal agreement. And later, the other cities also joined in, Battleground, La Center, and Richville, and then obviously Vancouver. And so that's what ties all the folks together to be able to then do group purchasing of ambulance service and regulation of ambulance service. And through that interlocal, they delegate certain responsibilities. For example, EMS District 2, currently the Board of County Commissioners, oversees the ambulance contract. And when it comes to regulating EMS, the cities delegate the county to be able to have that regulatory enforcement arm as far as making sure ambulance services are meeting the minimum requirements. So that's how it's currently structured. And then obviously the ambulance contract that we have down below there currently with American Medical Response. So that's a quick overview. And I thought what I'd do is kind of get you up to speed with where we are since we last met. You'll recall that back this past summer, we passed our EMS system design decisions. And again, those lay the kind of the policy level framework for the next contract. Gives us our blueprint that we need. For example, what should be the contract service area? How do we want to set up the regulatory oversight, both on the medical side of the house and the business side of the house? What's going to be our response time performance standards, our clinical performance standards? How do we want to do dispatch and control center operations? And then lastly, what are those things that we want to see from our next ambulance contract? From there, that's when we start using those key policy decisions to then flesh out our interlocal agreement and our uniform EMS ordinance. Following your approval of the decisions, your advisory board, the EMS Administrative Board, is composed of citizen representatives in business, finance, law, healthcare administration. They recommended those key legal instruments back in July. And then that went out to our participating jurisdictions, including the City of Vancouver, if they wanted to use any of those legal instruments in their contract. That I'll bring them up to speed on as far as you know, their decision to go ahead and contract out on their own. That went out late July, asking for their feedback if they wanted any revisions or corrections to the recommended interlocal and ordinance. The one feedback that we did get from the small cities has to do with, well, how do we appoint our small cities representative onto that EMS District 2 board? And so we came up with some specific language as far as how that will be done. And I'll cover that when we talk about changes to the interlocal. Where are we with the ambulance procurement process? You might recall that back in March, the City of Vancouver elected for the next contract, they would like to basically administer the contract for their contract service area, which includes the City of Vancouver and Fire District 5. I think both the city and the district realized in order for us to really continue to have kind of a seamless system, not a fractured system, that's both makes sense financially as well as clinically, we need to try to marry the two contracts as closely as we can. So the decision, through the help of Fitch & Associates, let's do one RFP that ideally will be awarded to one ambulance contractor, but then there'd be two separate contracts. So that's the direction we took, and you supported that recommendation in June, giving staff that direction. The City of Vancouver issued an RFP. There was only one consulting firm that submitted a proposal, and that was Fitch & Associates, and they just recently signed that contract with them. So Fitch will start that work. In fact, I think one of the representatives are here this week to start some of that initial labor. So our next steps now, obviously, is one, approving that interlocal agreement for the next contract, as well as the Uniform EMS Ordinance. So I'll kind of quickly go over some of those key changes today. And then the next steps in the ambulance procurement process is the consultant going out, doing the interview, collecting the data for the RFP, coming up with a joint RFP specifications. And typically what we've done in the past is we've used those system design decisions to help flesh out those RFP specifications. But because the city's going to have their own contract, that's where I think where the consultant's going to earn his money is basically, yes.
You said that the Vancouver made a decision, they already signed a contract with a consultant to go out there with their own RFP. How's right. that? Do we need to come up with our own, or are we
no.
tagging on to
good,
theirs?
Yes, good point. I'm sorry I didn't point that out. Oh, The way we'll take on to theirs is through an interlocal agreement. We've drafted an interlocal agreement with the city of Vancouver to say, all right, you've hired, and we've worked with our purchasing department and their purchasing department as far as what's the best way to do this. And what was recommended was the city would do the RFP, contract with a consultant. We would join on through an interlocal agreement. So that consultant would represent both the district's interests as well as the city of Vancouver's interests. So that's kind of how we set up.
And is that a very healthy way to do this? This is working out really well. So the specifications that they're coming up with clearly are what we would be agreeing to, and or is there some kind of compromise there because they're driving and we're not?
Well, I think we'll see how that process will go when representatives from the district as well as representatives from the Vancouver come together to start talking about those contract specifications. We've spent a good deal amount of time past 2 years with about 30 individuals, including representatives from Vancouver, and about 750 meeting hours to talk about what do we want the next contract to look like. So hopefully there's more agreement than differences, but I think we'll see where maybe some of those differences might lie when we actually sit down and start fleshing out those contract specifications. So it's a bit premature for me to say where those differences might lie, but if there are some real fundamental differences, obviously we bring them back to you as our district board to say, here's where some of those rough points are. How do you want us to proceed?
Okay. I assume there's county funds and there's city funds, and because the city signed the contract with this consultant,
right,
that they're footing the bill for it. Are they going to bill us for some of that, or are we basically getting a free ride?
They're footing about 80% of the bill based on basically the call volume. About 80% of the ambulance call volumes in the city, so they're footing about 80% of this consultant's.
So they're going to bill us back 20%?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, I probably back up here. So where work will occur is in the fall here, starting to flesh out those specifications. And then the goal right now currently is to have that draft RFP ready to go by the end of this year for the next ambulance contract, with the hopes of releasing it in the first year, January 2014, and then basically awarding that contract in June. The reason why we want to give them a good 6 months for startup is if you want to attract outside bidders, you need to give them enough startup time, because there's quite a bit of capital outlay to get an ambulance contract up and running. You're typically will use your current incumbent workforce, but you've got to purchase the ambulances. Oftentimes you're going to do your own dispatching operations, which is a fairly large undertaking. Making sure that the computers are tied together, if you do that between our 911 dispatch center and their dispatch center. So you need to give them enough time. If you give them too short of a time, then you're not going to attract those outside bidders. They're going to say, look, we can't compete against the current incumbent. You know, we don't have sufficient time to get up and running. So we want to give them plenty of time to attract the number of qualified bidders. So our first kind of legal instrument that we've got for you today, and it's under tab one in your notebooks there, and that's extending the current interlocal agreement. Because we are doing something a bit different, and that's coming up with a joint RFP with the city, we need a little bit more time to flesh out those joint RFP specifications. So where this current contract ends September, we're needing to push out this current contract another 3 months through December to give us sufficient time to flesh out those contract specifications. And so, one, the district will be meeting, putting on your district hat, and you as the Board of County Commissioners staff will be both amending the interlocal agreement that we currently have with the city and the other cities, as well as revising the current ambulance contract just as far as the term ending in December. The next thing, as far as in your notebook under tab two, and that's all right, the next key legal instrument, the interlocal agreement. And what I highlighted here is just some of the key changes. If you have any questions as far as what some of those changes are, I'm happy to address those. One is obviously removing the city of Vancouver from the interlocal agreement. And this next contract, the city of Woodland wants to participate. And they passed a resolution to that effect. So they're ready to come on board, not only for the small part of Woodland that is in Clark County, but also the part that's in Cowlitz County. We've changed also in the interlocal agreement how the annual inflation adjustment is done for the contractor. Typically, each year we need to account for inflation, And historically, that's been done on the national CPI. And what we've done this time, going out and looking at what other communities do, is do more of a blended indexed inflation adjustment, where it's both on the CPI all for the Portland-Salem area, which I think is a bit better reflective of inflation for the Northwest compared to the United States as a whole. And then also the inflation adjustment for medical services. And so it takes the average of both of those. If you ask, well, what's the difference between the old CPI adjustment to the current, it's about 0.6%, so it's not a huge 0.6% advantage to the way we'd be doing with the next contract. EMS District 2 board composition, that's probably the biggest change. One of the things we initially discovered when we were going out and meeting with folks in the community and saying, how do we want things to look next go around, was we'd like to have a more representative EMS District 2 board, where it's not just the Board of County Commissioners, but also representatives from the cities. Initially, we were thinking about two county commissioners, two city council members from Vancouver, and then one small cities representative. Vancouver elected to go ahead and withdraw from this contract. What we've done is there's still two Board of County Commissioners and then one small cities representative.
Back to your question, or your point of the consumer price index, that blended rate. Can that go positive and negative, or does it go zero to positive?
Zero
can
to positive. One year. One
ramps up, never down.
Yeah, one year we were actually, you might remember, being a businessman, you might recall when the CPI was actually in the negative numbers. Mm-hmm. I think it was, what, 2 or 3 years ago, it was like a minus 2%. And even though it went down as far as the inflation, CPI adjustment, obviously the cost of doing business kept going up for the ambulance contractors, as far as fuel costs, wages, salaries, benefits. So that year we just zeroed it. We didn't go into the negative.
I just wonder the way the contract and the formula is set up,
sure.
Regardless of however that blended rate comes out,
yeah.
Does it allow for only increasing the rates, or does it really reflect if we went through a deep recession where everything went down, that it would actually reduce the cost?
If there was a deep recession, I think there's some options that can be done. I think one first would be looking at, probably the least likely, is we do have the ability, which is called a subsidy index inflation adjustment, where if a jurisdiction wants to, they within their own jurisdiction can offer a subsidy to lower that cost, that bill for annual service. No one's ever elected to do that. The other option probably would then be working with the contractor to probably lower service levels, and then commensurate with that, lower the average patient charge. I don't think we'd say we want the same service levels, but we're going to lower the average patient charge. You put them in the red. Their profit margin is very small. I mean, their collection rate right now is about 41%. And we saw this last time because they were wanting an increase to the average patient charge. I think Commissioner Stewart and Melton were here 2 or 3 years ago when we were looking for something more than just the CPI. There's an extraordinary cost increase that we were asking for because the collection rates have gone down so much. We had to go back, you gave us direction to go back to the drawing board and actually help try to lower those costs without compromising patient care where we wouldn't increase it so much. So I guess that's a long answer in that. Probably before we just arbitrarily say, well, we're lowering your average patient charge, which is what we use to regulate rates, we probably first work with the contractor to say, what's your current profit margin? Okay, is that close? What service levels can we decrease without compromising patient care? And then what should be the appropriate average patient charge from that? Does that make sense? Let's see. So that deals with the EMS District 2 board composition. And then one of the things that we are currently doing with the next contract, but again, we'll find out when we get into the joint contract specifications, is in addition to the initial term of the contract, which is 6 years, historically we've always given them earned rights to extensions. In the past, what we've done is you can get earned 3 2-year extensions for superior performance. So it just encourages them to perform higher. Because it's a costly process to go through and put it back out to bid and award a contract. So if you've got a contractor who's probably meeting the performance standards, not only here, but we also do a market study to see, well, how do we compare to other communities? If we're doing at or better than other communities, it just makes sense if they would earn an extension versus going back out to contract. And then the uniform EMS ordinance. One of the things that we're doing here, and you'll see a lot of changes with the ordinance, is that we're adding a lot of language back in. Our original ordinance had the county more in the role of licensing ambulance services, issuing vehicle permits, and certifying personnel. And since we had an exclusive contract, we kind of asked ourselves, since we're already probably exceeding the state minimum standards, do we really need to do that? So we removed a lot of that language. One of the unique things that happened 2 years ago is what kind of supersedes our local contract or federal contracts. And the VA awarded a federal contract to another ambulance service. So what we want to make sure, if we are allowing other ambulance services in this community under the VA contract or federal contract, we want to make sure that they at least have appropriately certified personnel, properly licensed ambulance services, as well as make sure the vehicles they have are properly permitted. So I just make sure that at least, you know, that the people that are working on the ambulances and the ambulances themselves have the proper training and equipment.
That's not already provided for by just simply state?
It's done by the state, but it's done out of what I would call, I'm struggling with the term, but basically it's, you kind of police yourselves. It's probably not the right term, but it says ambulance service, go ahead and provide us your certified personnel, tell us that your vehicle has been, meets these standards, and submit paperwork and submit money. In other words, there's no one coming down from the state to make sure that, all right, do they have the equipment on board that they really say that they have?
Okay.
Are the people that they've listed the only people that are actually functioning on those ambulances?
So we're not increasing the requirements or qualifications. We're just saying verify that those standards have been met and they comply with state and federal requirements. Okay.
And then under tab 5, you'll see the other thing that we'll be doing is when Vancouver withdrew, because Vancouver provides fire service for District 5, District 5 would like to also be part of Vancouver's ambulance contract. And so District 5 requested in June to also be removed from the current EMS District 2 ordinance, which includes that fire district. So that's one of the revisions that we'll be making. And then lastly, since 1992, PRESA has been doing kind of the staff work on behalf of the county and the district when it comes time to contract oversight. So this just kind of renews that in the local agreement where PRESA continues those services for the district and the county as far as regulating EMS and administering EMS.
Mm-hmm. Is PRESA still going to be providing those services for City of Vancouver as well or no?
We don't know that yet. That's probably going to be discovered as we get into the joint RFP specifications. We have no idea what degree they want to oversee the contract and what services they may want to use PRESA for. For example, we have an EMS database that's pretty robust that grabs the clinical data as well as the response time data, both from PRESA's computer and the contractor's computer, and we're able to generate oversight reports to see how are they performing both clinically as well as response time performance-wise. So I would hope the city would take advantage of that system, but that remains to be seen.
Question. We refer to District 1, District 2, Fire District 5, city limits. It would be handy for us to be able to have them show those on a map so that we can understand geographically what areas we're talking about.
You bet. And I don't have that today, but I'd be happy to provide you those maps. So you kind of have an idea. In fact, I've asked GIS, knowing that we're going to have two separate contracts, I've asked GIS to produce a new map that kind of shows what's the contract service area for Vancouver, what's the contract service area for the remainder of the district. But on the map, it looks pretty small as far as compared to the EMS District 2, Vancouver, and District 5, because it's the urban center that represents about 80% of the call volume. We've got a lot larger area to cover as far as EMS District 2, but only 20% of the call volume.
Okay. When GIS provides that map, along with this documentation, we'd like to be able to put that in a grid so that the citizens can understand what we're talking about here.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you.
So that's all I have for, I think that's it. All I've got, so open any other questions you might have.
Well, it looks like you pretty much nailed things down. There's really no subjectivity to this at all, it appears, and you're on the right track. It's basically information to us that says, you know what you're doing and you're on the right path. So it's great.
The only thing I noticed, I think, is just a typo on the paperwork we have.
Yes. Mark caught that yesterday. Is it the 2013?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I should have gotten a new one for you. Yes, it's December.
You had the tab right, but not this. So,
so instead of getting an A++, you just get A+.
That's right.
So when do you expect to come back to us, Doug, for any action, either from the EMS board or from the commissioners?
From both the district board and commissioners, it will be October 29th. We'll have the legal instruments that we talked to today as hearing.
And I had, I'm not clear on Cressa in Vancouver's part in Cressa. I thought that they were all part of that and all part of our radio systems.
Oh, well, when it comes to 911 dispatch and 911 operations and the radios and the infrastructure, all that stuff, yes, Vancouver, as well as all of the other fire, law enforcement folks in the county, are part of Cressa. Where the difference will lie, or where we don't know yet, will be when it comes to the ambulance contract. What part of that will Vancouver want to do, and what part of that may they want Cressa to assist them with? So that's the piece that we don't know yet.
Mm-hmm. Seems like a fine line of splitting when everything else is through Cressa, then ambulance. I just have to be there, because if someone was to dial 911, it automatically goes there.
Oh, yes, and it will still, that will still happen. That will be seamless. When someone calls 911, whether they're within Battleground or Vancouver, it's going to come through Cressa. Mm-hmm. Cressa will take that call, and it will go out to the contractor, hopefully one contractor who's either, you know, serving both Vancouver and the district. So that will still occur. It's not like that call is going to go somewhere to Vancouver in the process. No, that will continue to go through Cressa.
It's really the contract oversight part that we're going to have to discuss with Vancouver and how they want to contract those services with Cressa. Primarily, Doug's work and the work that Elizabeth, our data analyst, does, is currently shared by the district currently. All of the dispatching radio and other components associated with Cressa are separate from the ambulance oversight. And so through this RFP process and through the interlocal agreements that we set up with the city, we'll have to kind of divide out that work and see which work they want to do themselves and which work they want to go ahead and contract with the press for.
Wow. I just, it looks like are they trying to split hairs with that? I mean, do you think all emergency services would go through Cressa? Whether it be fire, police, ambulance, and dispatch accordingly. So I don't understand where they're trying to split, pull off from.
I think it has more to do with the policy level, actually being able to oversee their own ambulance contract as far as what they would like to see from the contractor and have some say at that policy level.
It's more in the paperwork part.
Not a service. Yes. But some of it, Chief, do you want to?
Yeah, it's really the, like Dave said, it's the, once you have the contract, it's overseeing the performance of it. So Doug reports to the MSAT, how they're doing on response times, those type of administrative oversight pieces.
Okay.
We have never administered a contract before. So part of what we're asking Fitch to do is show us what that looks like reasonably, what's the very lean way of doing it. And then at that point, we'll probably look at cost of that would be to see, do we have to add an FTE, can we do it with existing staff, can we automate it? I mean, all those questions we're going to ask people to do, because currently, Doug does it for the entire group, and if we've got this separate contract, we've got to provide the same level. We've got to provide, you know, a contract oversight to meet the standards for auditors and things like that. So we have never had that work, so we just want to get a look at what that looks like, and then do we stay with Cressa and let them do it? Do we use some pieces of Cressa and use some pieces of the city? Does the city just do it all? Those are the questions that happen. But the emergencies part is all still going to be intact.
Right.
So the citizens won't see us behind the scenes.
Cool. Thanks. Great.
All right.
Great work.
Thank you.
We'll see you on the 29th.
All right.
Excellent.
Okay.
10:30, isn't it? Or is it 11?
11.
By 11.
Okay.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yep.